hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Very glad that you've tuned in. And we're sitting in the Skyline Studio, the Allstate Skyline Studio, high atop the Chicago River on this Wednesday afternoon. Frank Sennett will come by from Crane Chicago Business. He's with us on most Wednesdays. And there's a breakup at JAM. Arnie Granite, one of the co-founders of JAM, announced yesterday that he is leaving. And, well, that just brought back a lot of concert memories, I think, probably for a lot of us. We'll talk to Frank about that. And also about, what do you think of the idea of a graduated property tax in Chicago? Should people who have bigger, nicer houses pay a higher rate when it comes to property taxes than those who don't? It was floated by mayoral candidate Susana Mendoza and then quickly taken back. So apparently not a very popular idea, but we'll talk to Frank about that. We will go to the Block Club as well and talk to Seamus Toomey about what's going on at the Lincoln Yards project. I had talked to some of the developers there yesterday. Not the developers, but some of the local club owners who are opposed to parts of that development, and looks as if their voices have been heard. We'll talk to Seamus about that in the second half hour. But we start usually on Wednesday afternoons with Terry Savage, and Terry is on a phone line with us this afternoon. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Glad to be here on my usual Wednesday slot. 4 days in a row, the market's up. Oh, boy, let's start sharing.
Okay, so we're up 138 points now. I think that's off the high for the day. But it comes after, what, the end of the latest round of trade talks with China, and it looks as if we're optimistic?
That's this week's story. Actually, it looks like the Chinese are going to have to cave in some respects, mainly because they've got their own problems as their domestic economy slows. So that's encouraged the stock market, but I'm not sure whether this is just a rally in what has been looking like a bear market or the beginning of something else. Earnings, all the earnings forecasts are, next year doesn't look so good. There's global growth slowdown. And so the market's just, I think, treading water here.
And do you think this is going to be behind us, or do you think this is just going to be something that's going to linger through the year?
You know what? I've been spending a lot of time, because next week is the Executives Club annual economic forecast luncheon, when our guests every year, and I keep track of their records, Diane Swonk, great economist, Dr. Bob Fralick, not only a great economist, but a really funny guy, and this year we're joined by Jack Ablin. So I've been paying attention to what everybody's been saying, just get the broad perspective. And you know what? I'm watching CNBC all day, and I think nobody knows anything about what's going to happen next. We are in, I think, a kind of trendless market right now, and everybody's making up excuses for why stocks should go up or why they can't go very far. And I think it's a coin flip for me at this moment.
I was reading, I think it was in CNBC, maybe MarketWatch, a headline today that said investors are finding out now why the stock market tanked in December. And what they were referring to, Orion mentioned it in the business report, about how Lennar Corporation was issuing a lower financial forecast for the coming year. That follows Apple, Constellation Brands. You know, the fact that these big companies now are projecting probably some problems this year. In fact, 72 of the 500 companies that have issued earnings warnings they have so far, 72 of 500, twice as many who have issued positive guidance. So a negative outlook
there.
Well,
yeah, there, because they don't want people to be disappointed. I mean, it does make sense. If you're the CEO of a company, first of all, you cannot mislead investors. You give something called guidance so that the securities analysts don't look like dummies if you have a bad quarter. And then that's kind of an incestuous relationship, you know, CEOs and CFOs and securities analysts. They all don't want to be made to look like fools. And so it's astounding that just not even 5 months ago, everybody's talking about the whole world is global growth. Things are going to keep going and growing. It's terrific. And now there's warnings of slowdowns. And, yeah, that's really inhibited the market somewhat. And I think it had a lot to do with December.
So is it that we're so slow to recognize the recovery, and that once we do and finally put our guard down, that it's over? Is that what's happened here?
No, I think what's happened is the availability and the instant availability of news and commentary. Things that used to be handled by, news reporters and show up the next morning in the Wall Street Journal get telegraphed instantly. That's probably better. Everybody gets the same information at the same time. And that's what creates part of what creates a volatility in the market. Everybody moves at once, and then it's accentuated by trading programs and orders that are computer-generated. So I think you get this volatility, but human nature doesn't change. Human nature at the top always wants to believe the good times will roll forever. When things start going down, the human nature makes us too pessimistic. And probably the truth is somewhere in between.
Well,
that's what the market's trying to find.
I'm the picture of pessimism. I mean, the idea of me being optimistic, it's difficult. And so what I was trying to get to is that I finally was thinking, well, why we're here, you know, we're in Oz, we made it. And as soon as I turn the corner, people are telling me that you know, things were falling apart. That's kind of the point I was getting at.
Yeah, well, the news moves that way, but the economy doesn't quite. The economy moves a lot slower, and the question is how far in advance. The market always, you know, people anticipate, the market anticipates. So the question is how far ahead of yourself do you want to get?
You know, yes.
That's kind of the back and forth that I don't have the expertise on. You know, my strategy is to be a long-term investor, appropriately diversified, and to not try and pay attention, except when I'm going to have to moderate a big economic forecast meeting, to not pay attention to what day by day is the excuse for the market going up or down.
You know, we got 30 seconds or so, but yesterday at this time we said it was over for Sears, and we just got the breaking news then that Eddie Lampert had another day to come up with a down payment on a loan. That deadline now is again this afternoon. I mean, what do you make of that whole thing? Are we just...
You know something? I would always be rooting for Sears, but I am not rooting for Eddie Lampert to have another chance to mess up that company.
It's like putting a
horse out of its misery or your dog out of misery. Please, this has just been a terrible slow-motion disaster of one of America's greatest companies, and it's a very, as far as I'm concerned, it's not only sad for company history, it's sad for all the retirees and employees of Sears as well.
All right, that's Terry said.
Put it out of its misery.
So it's time, you're saying. It's just time.
I know people are saying, oh, let it hang on because maybe my pension will be better. Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation will take over the pensions, and that's another story. It's very sad for the employees. It's really sad to see someone take over a business of merchandising and treat it like a financial piggy bank for so many years. What did you expect? What did anyone expect? It's sad.
Terry Savage is on a phone line, and she's got a column up today about gold and how it might be time to buy gold. And I read the column, and it seems to be about, maybe 60% about the reasons gold is not a good investment. Terry, explain
because
yourself.
Because it's so embarrassing to write about gold. Because everybody thinks you're either a bit of an eccentric nut or...
Well, Terry, nobody thinks you are a bit of an eccentric nut. Let me just say that right now.
Well, I hope not, because gold's up $6 an ounce today to $12.92, okay?
All right.
And I don't time the markets. I always, as I disclose in my column, have a position in gold stocks and mutual funds. But while I was looking around at all the market action, and I wrote this a few days ago, I was realizing, you know, gold, which I always look at, like I look at what's the interest rate on the 10-year Treasury note. I mean, these are things I look at, like other people look at the weather report. And I've been noticing gold has kind of acted stronger and stronger. A couple of people asked me about how to buy it, and I thought this was the time to write a column. But I wanted to make very clear that this is not about the end of the world. This is not about we better own gold when all else falls apart, because if all else falls apart, I'm not sure gold is going to save you. So I put a couple of reasons why you don't want to own gold, and then I'll talk about why you might want to.
Can I say, first of all, can I just say, reading the column, one of the things that surprised me is that one of the ways you buy gold is to literally buy gold. I mean, it didn't occur to me that you're talking about buying gold coins. And if you do that, then you've got to pay for a bank vault, I think, to store them. So that's a deferment.
That's not much. I mean, you're not buying a 10-foot by 10-foot bank vault. You're buying a safe deposit box. I mean, unless you're King Midas.
Well, I jump in big.
Gold is just an asset class, and when then the strongest asset class in recent years has been the U.S. dollar, because people all over the world have had their problems, and we have been, as I'd like to say in my speeches, the least worst place to put your money. So people buy our treasury bills. It's kept our interest rates low because they're willing to change their currencies for something they perceived as safer, which is dollars, and they don't walk around with dollar bills typically. They've bought U.S. Treasury bills. And that's great because we're borrowing so darn much money, we have to sell a lot of Treasury bills. But in the last few months, and maybe part of it is political, what's going on in Washington, the erratic nature of our, let's say, of our foreign policy and so forth, there's just at the edge of the sentiment is like, ooh, I don't know how safe and secure the gold is, the U.S. dollar is. You know, maybe there's somebody... And I'm not putting these words as a reason, unbalanced in the White House. What else can the world turn to for security? And historically speaking, I mean, I'm not talking about the last 20 years. I'm talking about the last 2,000 years. That gold is what people have turned to. Now, someone's going to say, well, Bitcoin would be better. Hey, I'm not going to argue that. I'm just saying gold is an asset class. Now, if you just buy gold coins, you forgo any interest on your money. So, and it costs money, you're right, to store it. But you can buy gold mining shares or mutual funds, and it's entirely possible that when the stock market goes down, that doesn't always happen, but the gold kind of is a counterbalance. And so when the market's crashing, you might feel like, oh, well, at least I have my gold stocks. Now, by the way, in 2008, I watched the stock market go down a lot, and gold went down not because there was anything wrong with gold, but because the margin clerk said, well, then sell something else. We need to raise cash. And so gold funds were...
Okay, so, but are you suggesting this as a short-term buy? I mean, you say in your column...
No,
that,
I'm not. But, I'm saying this might be an entry point. Look, in 2011, let's perspective, in 2011, gold hit $2,000 an ounce. Okay, and... It's been in 2008 it was down at 850. So I'm not saying that the only thing to own and buy is gold, but a lot of people have asked me about it, and my goal is to, number one, keep you from being ripped off. I've noticed there are a lot of commercials on radio now about buy gold, buy these coins. Gold bullion coins sell for the price of gold. You can find that at the top of the CNBC website. You can find that at Kitco.com. You should know what the price of gold is. Bullion coins, like the Canadian Maple Leaf, the
Cougar Rand.
There are a bunch of them I've listed, and they're U.S. current, not collector's coins, but bullion coins, sell value based on the price of gold and the amount of gold in the coin.
Okay, so wait. So take a minute then and say, if someone is interested in buying gold coins, how do you do it? Where do you find the place to buy those gold coins that isn't...
I'm going
to
do a commercial right now because the only place for 25, 35 maybe years that I've bought gold coins is Harlan J. Burke. Right down on Clark Street in the Loop, Harlan J. Burke. So,
and you just show up there and buy gold coins.
Yes, you can give them cash or a check, and you buy gold coins, and then you take them immediately to your bank, your vault in your bank.
So I want to review then, because I asked you if this was a short term, and you said no, but you write that gold has been a terrible investment over the past four decades when compared to the stock market. So
that's right. So nobody's talking about it now. So I figured, well... maybe it was time to talk about it.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, this is not like sell everything and buy gold. It's that, number one, you can buy gold mutual funds at Fidelity, Vanguard, or usfunds.com, which is the real gold mining mutual fund that really is the one that has been around the longest. You can buy the exchange-traded fund, GLD, listed on the New York Stock Exchange. It's the Spider Gold Trust. It moves up and down with the bullion price of gold throughout the day. So if you want to trade or you just want to have a New York Stock Exchange stock in your investment portfolio, GLD is the Spider Gold Trust. So you can buy these mutual funds, or I show you how in this column at terrysavage.com to go to the website of the American Numismatic Association, money.org, to find a reputable dealer. Don't forget, my column goes around the country, but here in Chicago, Harlan J. Burke.
It was an interesting column. I learned a lot that I hadn't thought of before, so thanks for that.
Let's watch it. $12.90 is where I put my stake in the ground for the price of gold. We'll see what happens.
Terry Savage. Read the column at terrysavage.com. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Frank Sennett is in the studio with us. Frank, of course, from Crane Chicago Business and joins us on most Wednesdays. Frank, it's great to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
All right. So, you know, there, I want to talk about Arne Granite and Jam Productions because they announced, I think it was just yesterday, that it's Michelson, right, was his partner, longtime partner.
Yeah, Jerry Michelson.
Jerry Michelson, that they were going to, it looks like, split up in a way. Granite's going to stay involved in some things, but leaving Jam Productions. What do you tell me about that?
Yeah, so they were there right at the kind of dawn of the modern concert promotion industry with Jam here, and you had like Bill Graham with the Fillmore in San Francisco.
So Bill Graham, did he produce the Last Waltz too? I feel like
I believe he did.
Yeah, and I remember we were talking off the air. He died in a helicopter crash,
which I had not remembered. But yeah, the Last Waltz still one of my very favorite films.
Yeah, it was a great movie, so. Concert film.
Yeah, I like that rendition of Helpless that Neil Young does, and I think of that often these days. So Arne is throwing in the towel on some of the things that he's doing. You know, the merger of Ticketmaster and Live Nation has really radically transformed the concert promotion industry, and these kind of regional independent players are kind of pushed off to the side, makes it harder.
It's interesting because he and Jam revolutionized the way things worked going back to the 70s.
Yeah.
And now it's a new cycle where they're kind of, there's a new model and they aren't quite as effective perhaps as they used to be.
Yeah. And he's got other things to do. He's writing a memoir. He's really interestingly developing a circus act with the high wire walker Nick
that
Olenda.
That cracks me up.
Which is awesome.
So Olenda was in town to walk from Arena Towers across to Leo Burnett and they formed a friendship and now he's creating a circus.
They buddied up. I mean, this is the guy who, you know, his partner said was always the schmoozer, and so he's still, you know, making friends wherever he goes. So he's got this circus act coming up, and he's also going to be still involved with Jam Theatricals, which has won a lot of Tony Awards.
So. All right, so there's that. Oh, but is this an amicable? I mean, I know he gave an interview, I don't know if it was to Greg Cott or somewhere I read, and the quote was, "I will miss most of the people I worked with." Now, when I say,
couldn't we all say that, though?
Well, I know, but we might not all say that. And so when he said that, that kind of jumped out at me like, well, clearly there's some people here who he won't miss.
Yeah, I mean, the Greg Cott article, which I recommend everybody read who's interested at the Trib, he interviewed both Arne and Jerry. And Jerry, you know, basically said that he's still challenged by the business and wants to stay with it. There didn't seem to be any acrimony in the
right.
piece.
Oh, so. Good. And he's 70 years old.
Yeah, so Arne said, yeah, he's got other fish to fry. It's not because he's 70. So.
Right. Well, when he's 70, when I'm 70, it will be because I'm 70. with any luck. Okay, I want to talk to you about the race for mayor, too. A couple of articles in Cranes I saw. Let's start with I'll say lesser of them, but it's a more minor point. Tom Tunney up in the 46th ward? 44th ward, the Wrigley Field ward. He had said that the Cubs are trying to get rid of him, and it looks as if maybe the Ricketts family is supporting an opponent of Tunney's, but it looks like Tunney is going to be okay there.
Yeah, he released a poll to Greg Hines, and the poll shows him with the majority support. It shows his opponents with single-digit support. It's not overwhelming, like, you know, 90 to 10, but it's over 50%. So he looks like he's going to weather the storm, and I think 70-some percent of people in the poll said they have a favorable impression of him. So
that's nice.
Good favorability.
So that shows that the Cubs, even though they've got great sway in that neighborhood, they haven't taken it over completely.
That's right.
The bigger question I had, her point was Susana Mendoza floated this, well, Hines again called it a lakefront tax, but it was going to be a graduated property tax where wealthier people would pay more. It was publicized, it was ridiculed, and she withdrew it.
Yeah, she did back off of it. I mean, as Greg pointed out in his initial story on this, Kagi, the new Cook County assessor, wants to, you know, tighten up the assessments so that people with higher value houses are paying more of their fair share just under the current system. And then if you add it on top of that, a graduated tax, you know, there could be really significantly higher assessments on higher property values. So this was a trial balloon that was floated by Mendoza. It turned out to be a lead balloon.
Yeah.
With all the Burke stuff going on, this was almost a nice different thing to focus on in the mayoral race for reporters and the rest of us watching it. But all the other candidates have, you know, come out and taken swings at her about it, or a lot of the other main candidates. The one thing that I take away from this is she was really quick to back out of it, And the second thing is, she does look like a front runner because everybody's going after
her. Well, what I took out of it was that, you know, and I've been around for a lot of mayoral races in Chicago and aldermanic races. It's nice that in this race, whether it's Bill Daley talking about fewer aldermen or whatever, that the candidates seem to be debating real
policy
real
issues,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah, right. Really. I mean, do you agree with me?
Totally. I love how this race is shaping up. I mean, the Burke stuff's interesting, but it seems like everybody's got their Burke tie.
Right.
And they're just
of
all...
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're all, you know, kind of throwing that around, and that maybe nets out to I don't know what. But all of this policy stuff, I hear you. I mean, there's great substantive policy type decisions. I know Greg Hines is doing a great job digging into all of it. I'm going to sit and eat some popcorn.
ChicagoBusiness.com. Check it out. Frank Sennett, great to see you.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Okay, now, Amazon team, what if we just dropped the package on their front doorstep? That's too unsecured. Okay. What about if we dropped it in their house? That's creepy. Yeah, you're right. Ooh, how about in their garage? Could be just right. That might have been the process for Amazon after they announced that they're partnering with Oak Brook-based garage door company Chamberlain Group and using their connected garage door technology to allow Amazon packages to be delivered safely. It's the latest move in trying to fight a recent spike in porch pirates who steal packages from front doorsteps.
Get off my porch, you pirates!
This could be just what we need to get rid of them. And Cars.com needed to get rid of a few employees, 126 of them to be exact. Cars.com said the round of layoffs is just part of the changing times and shifting their business to achieve their goals of, quote, driving performance for clients to go deeper with data. New year, new work goals, I guess. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. As we wind things down here ahead of the John Williams Show, in the studio now is Seamus Toomey, who is the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago. Seamus has been in before a few times. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's do the 45-second PSA. Tell me about Block Club and why people should be subscribing. Because they should, damn it.
Exactly. Block Club Chicago is a neighborhood news site. We cover your neighborhoods within the city of Chicago with a reporter stationed around the city. We're trying to hit every neighborhood we can. We used to be called DNA Info, but that went away. But we returned as a nonprofit, as a subscription-based service, and we're aiming to cover everything that moves in your neighborhood.
Well, it turns out DNA Info was a nonprofit, too. That was part of the problem.
I think that was a no-profit.
It was a no-profit, right. This is a different setup so that you're equipped to do it that way.
Exactly.
And things are going pretty well?
So far, so good. Yeah, we're going to be hiring some new reporters the next month or so. We got some support from the Joyce Foundation. Thank you. It's going great.
Okay, so one of the neighborhoods people are talking a lot about, the Near North Side in the Second Ward and the Lincoln Yards development, right? There was news this week that the alderman there, Brian Hopkins, put the kibosh on this 20,000 seat stadium. There's going to be a soccer team there, and a series of entertainment venues, I think, run by Live Nation. And Hopkins said no to that.
It was really big news for this development because this is one of those developments that's so large, it's 70 acres, that it's one of those things that you feel like it's coming no matter
right,
what.
Right.
And it's important for not just Chicago, but you know, for everyone in the area, because for one, you'll see this. I mean, it's right along
the Kennedy.
It's right on along the Kennedy, just a little bit north of the Morton Salt warehouse. So it's very prominent with all these entertainment venues and at one point the soccer stadium. It would have been a destination not just for Chicagoans.
I was going to say it has the makings of being a city within a city in a way, right? Its own spot, its destination.
Exactly. Almost like a brand new high-rise neighborhood.
And I thought it was great that you'd have a 20,000 seat stadium here. Of course, I don't live in the neighborhood, but you know, bring soccer to the city, you know, make it more accessible, all of that. Was there that much community opposition, or what exactly happened there?
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, I think Alderman Hopkins and Sterling Bay and Live Nation, they had three big hurdles to overcome with local opposition. They had the music venues. There was tremendous pushback from the local community about getting pushed out and Live Nation taking over this whole district.
Now, I know Tom and Katie, right? They run the Hideout. They were leading it, and it's sort of a Northside institution. I talked to Robert Gomez yesterday, who owns the Beat Kitchen. They had formed a sort of coalition of little clubs to fight this Live Nation influence. So, and when I was talking to Gomez yesterday, you'd think this would be a, they'd be celebrating, but they still are a little wary. I mean, they're still continuing their petition drive. It's like they don't quite believe it's over yet. Do you think it's over?
Well, it was a very, at least public, an abrupt retreat by both the soccer stadium and Live Nation. I don't think we've, I mean, I think it sounds like from the soccer proposal that thing is
dead.
That's
it. I think the Ricketts pulled out of that.
Ricketts pulled out of that. That leaves a Sterling Bay with an ownership in a soccer team without a stadium to play in.
Right.
But the Live Nation, we haven't heard definitively that they're pulled out of this. They Hopkins says, the alderman up there says they're not going to have ownership in any venues in the site, but he also said he wanted to spread these out throughout the properties and not have an entertainment district.
And it's not the sort of thing to offer the Hideout a new spot, because the Hideout doesn't want a new spot. I mean, the beauty of the Hideout is that it's an old spot.
Exactly. The charm of the Hideout, just the physical exterior of the place is an anomaly in that neighborhood.
And the other thing, you know, Frank Sennett was just in here and we were talking about how this run for mayor has been in many ways about issues, believe it or not, right? And one of the things Bill Daley's running on is he wants to take away this aldermanic prerogative where they have the say. Hopkins pretty much has the say in what happens in his ward. If Daley were elected, Hopkins might have a little bit less of a say.
Exactly. And, you know, the bigger the project, the more there's a say from the fifth floor.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, to think that the mayor is not going to have some input in a $5 billion project is, that's a little crazy, but yes, Hopkins has huge influence on this. And, you know, he was hearing from his residents that they didn't want they didn't necessarily want the stadium. They didn't want these venues. They don't want the traffic involved, and they don't want the TIF money involved. And that's another
big thing. Yeah. Seamus Toomey, the editor-in-chief at Block Club Chicago. I do Book Club every time I see you. Block Club Chicago. Check it out. Thanks for coming by.